Today is August 22nd, 1988, and I'm here with Purnima Shantharam at her home in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're going to be talking a little about Indian dance and other traditions that are brought from the East India. Okay, first of all, I need your full name.
Purnima Shantharam.
Okay. And the spelling for both names, please?
It's P-O-O-R-N-I-M-A. Shantharam is S-H-A-N-T-H-A-R-A-M.
Okay. And we need your address also.
2510 Spreading Oaks Lane, Jacksonville, Florida, 32223.
Okay. And we need your date of birth and your birthplace. I figure that's more polite than asking you how old you are.
Date of birth, 2/28/53, and I was born in India.
Okay. What part of India there?
I was born in a village in Madras, in the state of Madras, about 200 miles.
Okay. Prima was telling me that now they're kind of going by the language groups rather than the geographical names for areas, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What language is that you speak?
I speak Tamil.
Okay.
Prima also speaks Tamil.
Okay, yeah. And the particular group would be Tamil Nadu, she was telling me?
Tamil Nadu. Tamil Nadu is a state.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
It used to be called Madras State, now it's called Tamil Nadu because we speak Tamil.
Okay. All right. Okay, and I'm interested in also other places that you've lived besides the area around Madras and Jacksonville.
My father was in the railway, so he moved a lot. So I moved from Madras State. I had gone to Trichinopoly. Then I have been in Madurai, which is supposed to be heart of Tamil Nadu, where Tamil was born, supposed to be born. And then I have gone to other states, lived in other states like Karnataka, a little bit of Kerala. I have not really been up north too much. I've just gone there to visit in India. In United States, I went to Seattle. From Seattle, I was in Davis, California. And from there, I came to Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay. How long have you been here in the States?
I came in 76, so that makes it 12 years.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Gosh.
Wow. what brought you over, by the way?
Really my husband, because we got married and I came right away.
Oh, I see.
Within 3 months.
I see. Okay. How long have you been in Jacksonville?
8 years.
8 years. Okay, so you've been here for a while then.
Yes, it's home now.
Yeah. Okay, and also I'm interested in your occupation.
I'm a housewife.
Housewife, okay. Domestic engineer, right?
Yes. Well, housewife by any other name is housewife.
Okay. Okay, how did you get started with the dance?
About 3-4 years ago, a friend of mine knew I knew dancing. I had not told anybody before that I had done anything. So she said, why don't you teach a couple of children? We had Festival of India in Jacksonville. We had Festival of India all over the United States. People were coming from India. So they said, let's do something in Jacksonville. So we did it on a very grand scale. And so at that time, I took part in one dance myself. I did another one all by myself. And I told them I would definitely teach the children. So I had about 4 or 5 children that I, that I picked to teach. It was very, very hard.
Mm.
Because they didn't know, they didn't know anything about Indian dance. And unfortunately, they didn't know anything about religion. They knew that there was Lord Krishna or Rama or something like that, but they didn't know anything about religion. So you have to teach them. When you teach them dance, you have to teach them other things too. You have to teach them grace, which is very important for Indian dancing. We cannot do without it. Even though you may get the steps, grace has to come naturally. So we had to naturally make them do it.
Mm-hmm.
So since then I've been involved.
I see.
They just didn't let me get out because there's nobody else here to teach. So I've just been teaching the children. Every time there's a program, not all the time, but every time there's a program, we start maybe a month ahead of time and teach them.
Okay. And you learned it in India as you were growing up?
Yes. Uh-huh.
How did you learn it over there?
Well, I'm born in a Brahmin family.
Oh.
And generally we are taught music. Whether we like it or not, you're taught music. And my mother loves dancing. She learned dancing when she was little, so she wanted me to learn dancing. So unfortunately I could not learn too much because my daddy was moving from place to place every 2 years. So I learned 2 years continuously, and after that I would take part in school activities so somebody would teach me. So I did not have classical teaching after about 2 years of dancing, but I somehow kept in touch with it because I like dancing myself, and that's how I go see programs and, you know, keep myself abreast of things.
You mentioned you grew up in the Brahma family. Is dancing a particular part of that group?
No. Brahmins at one time were against dancing.
Oh.
Brahmins are for music.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay, so the music came before the dancing.
Yes, definitely. See, we all learn music before dancing because mom used me. Every festival we sing, everything, all the religious songs, everything is in classical music, so you have to learn that.
I see. So I suppose then you learned a lot of dance, both from people that would know it, like maybe friends or relatives as you're growing up there?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, lots. Music I learned more through them. Dancing, because, like I was saying, except for my mom's family, because of my grandmother, my mother supposedly danced at her own wedding reception, a couple of dances. So they are very interested in dancing. But generally other families, they were not. Mm-hmm. And people were criticizing to say, my God, she's 16 years old, you're still teaching her dancing. It was not very much in favor with among the Brahmins. But now it's all disappeared. Everybody dances. Mm-hmm. Nobody sees anything wrong in it, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Before we were talking on tape, you were mentioning that over time, it was kind of the dancers were part of the lower caste, right?
Yes. Dancers were a caste by themselves. They were just dancers. They did not... I wouldn't say they did not get married, but they had... They will not marry into anybody else other than dancing families, because others were not supposed to get up on stage and dance. You can sing on stage, you can get up and sing. It was not thought it was wrong. But in the very, very old days, only, you know, that class of people would dance, and they would dance in temples and at weddings and like for kings. So that's the way it was done before. It's not like that anymore.
Mm-hmm. What types of dances did you learn as you were growing up over there?
I learned only Bharatanatyam. Bharatanatyam was a very classical dance of the South. That's the only thing I learned. I mean, some people it takes about 5-6 years to take steps. For 6 months, they just teach you the tai, which is just basic 1-2. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn that for 6 months because you have, however tall you are, you have to make yourself half the size and dance. Mm-hmm. And that is so hard. So that's what they teach for the first 6 months.
I see.
There are lots of people here who learn dancing in the United States too.
Mm-hmm.
There are like dancers from India who have come here and they teach them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is that taught through like a studio or people's homes? Or
people's homes, generally.
Oh. Uh-huh.
People's homes.
Do they have like traveling dancing teachers that drop in, or like you go, instead of going to your piano lesson, you go to your dance lesson?
Right, yes.
I see.
They do. And mostly they have it on weekends so that, you know, it's like they don't teach one at a time. Dancing, you can teach a group of children together. Like piano, maybe you have to pay attention to one student at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, you can teach a group of them together. And that way they, you know, they see what somebody else is doing and maybe do better or do worse.
Mm-hmm.
Simply do better.
Is that kind of the same way that you're teaching the students here in Florida?
That is how I started. I try to teach all the 3 children that I started with the same thing. But you can tell when somebody else does better and somebody else cannot. So the ones that did well, I taught them harder steps, so they do a different dance. So the one who didn't do well, I didn't teach them. There are some people who find it very hard. They're used to watching other kind of dances here, and they find it very hard because your eyes, your hands, your face, everything has to go together. You just can't move your legs or move your hands or your eyes and your face. Everything has to move, and they're finding that hard to do.
Mm. I see. Okay. I'm also interested in a little bit more about some of the dance traditions in India. I would suppose you'd have real distinct styles with the different regions and language groups there.
Uh-huh. Yes. See, Bharatanatyam itself, it is from Tamil Nadu. And they have a little variation of Bharatanatyam from the state of Andhra Pradesh. and that is just a variation. But in Kerala, which is a neighboring state of Tamil Nadu, they have what is called Kathakali, and they paint their face, and their dance is real slow, and they have lots of eye movements. And as you go up north, there are so many variations. I don't know too much about that. Mm. There are so many variations.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is real distinctive of the dance tradition that you grew up with? What would be some things that would make that stand out from the other ones?
From the other ones.
It's hard to say, I guess, because you haven't seen a lot of the other ones. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the costume is different, definitely. The way you move your neck, which like, you know, supposed just to show you, like other dancers do not do this. Some things are uniquely this one. And some of the others that if you see, you can tell, only if you see, you can tell what is different from that or from this. I'm not such a scholar in this, I cannot tell so well.
Yeah, that's kind of difficult to say. Okay. Let's see. Let me look at my questions here a moment. You were mentioning also that most of the dances have to do with religious stories and things along the line.
Many of them.
Uh-huh.
It was because they also had to do love stories, but everything is, unfortunately, everything is associated with epics, with the storybooks that we had, and that in itself is involved with kings, and kings towards religious stories. So that is how everything ultimately is connected to religion. Almost always, I was just reading in this book, that's what they were saying, that almost always everything is connected with the religion. It's a sad dance, happy dance, mm-hmm. which you can depict by the faces of the performer. It's almost like miming.
Yeah.
It's very much almost like miming, because you can tell from the faces, from the face what they are saying, but they all also have like hand and leg movements. So it's a combination of all three of them.
Mm-hmm. They're actually acting out some of the stories sometimes in the dances too.
Uh-huh. I don't know if to you it's something like a ballet, you know, where there's a story, but in ballet you don't see facial expressions as much.
Right.
Here you see a lot of facial expression. You have to watch the faces. It's important.
Mm-hmm.
Here, face tells you the story of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Are the words to the songs often sung in the background there? Or could you get the story just by watching the dance and face?
Well, you have to know a little bit about the story. Then you can, for a person who does not understand the language, if you know a little bit of about the background of a story, then you can put it together. Otherwise, it's a little bit hard.
I see.
If you're born in India, maybe you would know, because you would know certain expressions that's used in everyday dancing or talking or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're from another whole different culture, then it's very hard for you to tell whether it is what it is about.
Okay. All right. Okay, I'm also interested a lot in some of the basic dance moves. Is there any way to kind of break it down into basic steps or movements?
Yes, you start off when they teach dancing. Is that what you mean? When they teach dancing, they start with the legs. Just the legs, nothing else. Because you have to get your body down. Like if you're up here, you have to, you know, dance from that height. You cannot... Your body has to come down, your knees have to bend, and they cannot bend in front, they have to bend sideways. And then they will slowly incorporate your hand into it. Then they will tell you to look this way and that way. And when you move your head left and right, you make sure your eyes follow you left and right, just not, you know, you have to look this way, and not just your neck movement, your eyes have to move.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there is a way that they teach,
mm-hmm.
you know, but... It can be, it is taught in part by part, so I guess it can be broken down into different parts.
I see. Are there names for the different steps or movements like
yes.
that?
Yes, uh-huh. yes, there are.
Could you give me an idea of what some of those are?
Okay, it's like the beginning steps, like when you do with your feet, you'd say ta, te, ta, te, then you teach them. Then you progress and you do like ta, te, te. So when I tell a child, do ta, 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 she knows this is the step that she has to do.
I see.
There will be variations of that step. So it has, none of these words have meanings.
Oh.
The words that I'm saying, none of them, people say it in different ways. They may say, tayya tak. It has no meaning, it's just beats. You have to follow the beats.
I see. For example, like you were doing there, we'll kind of describe it for the tape. It was like lifting up one foot and putting it down, lifting the other one, putting it down.
Yes.
And that was just a ta. Okay.
Right.
And then the other one was lifting it up twice.
Right, that was lifting, no, hitting your feet on the floor,
okay.
Then one move, take a step, then put the other leg back, and then the one in front, you have to put it down again. So it's like that, but it has no meaning. All it is a beat. Mm-hmm. When they're teaching you, they have this, it's something like, what is it you call that you make dough with?
A rolling pin?
Rolling pin, okay. It's like a stick or a rolling pin. They have another big wooden board right in front of them, the teacher. And she hits the board. Every time she hits the board, we take a step. So you have to listen to that. That's the basic. Hmm. When you say Bharatanatyam, that is only the footwork. Sometimes you can do a whole dance without too much footwork or handwork involved. It's just your face and your hands will tell you the story. Facial expression is extremely important to Bharatanatyam. That's why it makes it, I guess, different from any other dance. Like other dances, you may move fast, you may do so many other things, but here you have to look at a person's face. That tells you the story.
Hmm. The face is going to be expressing emotions.
Yes.
And,
yes, it'll express your anger, your sorrow, your love, your hate. When there's war, you know, it's like, you can tell from the, after a while, if you watched one or two performances, you can tell the difference, what it is.
Mm-hmm. I see. After your students would learn the basic footsteps and some of the footwork there, what would you teach them then? What would you move into for like the next lessons?
I haven't really taught them that way. I've just taught them songs. I haven't taught them ABC.
Oh, I see.
Because I haven't had the time, and
yeah.
I don't know that much. When you try to teach somebody ABC, you should be very good at grammar and everything else. The same way, I feel I'm not cut out to be that good that I can teach them. But if once you teach the steps, then you have to start putting the song together. First, you teach them just the steps. It has no connection with any song. And then you take a very simple song, which has mostly steps, and you teach them the head movements, to follow their heads. If your hand goes up, you follow your hand. If your hand goes behind, you follow your hands. Your head does not have to move, but your eye has to follow the hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you teach them those things, and then you have to teach them facial expressions, because that is the hardest part to come.
Oh, I see.
For children especially, that's very hard to come. When you tell them to be angry, that's when they want to smile. That day when I was teaching Sindhu for this program, there was one part when it's like, you know, you do that, that means you chop off.
Uh-huh, just kind of holding your hand
right.
Flat upwards.
You just cut it, you know, it's like flat. It's supposedly she was cutting somebody's head.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I told her, I said, you know, at that time, be real angry and do this. And that's when she knows I'm looking at her. That's when she looks up at me and she smiles. So that's
Oops.
A hard, yes. That's yeah. A part that is hard for them.
I see. Okay.
Because here in India, you pay a lot of attention to facial expression when you're talking also. Here, it's like you can't tell when somebody's angry or not sometimes. That's how I feel. Because they keep a straight face.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in India, you show your anger in your face. I guess that's how the whole thing comes about.
Sometimes the different expressions can mean
yes.
something different in different
mm-hmm.
countries.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they were down in South Florida working with some of the Haitians, and it's considered impolite for a younger person to look at like an older person in the eyes. And in America, you know, like a little kid's supposed to be looking at someone else.
Yeah.
They have some real problems there because the expressions mean something different.
No, in India, you at one time, you did not sit in front of your parents. You were standing when your parents were there. You did not sit in front of them.
Get those
yes.
kind of things also.
Yes.
Yeah, you were telling me also about some of the symbolism behind the hand motions there. Could you describe like some of the main ones for me?
Okay. Okay. When you put both your palms together, that is a namaste. Namaste is like a hello that we say, but with expression. This we say regardless if you're a dancer or not. This is how we say hello in India, and that's how it goes for dancing also. And It's like you put your palm down, and on top of your one palm, you keep the other hand. And you try to close it with your finger. That's a closed bud. And as you open your fingers, the flower opens. Mm.
There you have all four of your fingers on your thumb?
Yes, all of them together. And you open it like a flower. Or like if you want to describe a moon, you just have to put your... These things are hard to describe.
On tape here, yeah.
On tape. Yeah. It's like, you know, you describe a moon this way.
Uh-huh. And that's done just by kind of curling your index finger into your thumb.
And everything down between follows the index finger.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
See
what that looks like?
Yeah. Or a mountain. You know, it's like the same thing that how you describe a peak. You know, you go from down... And just the shape of the mountain, so that's how a mountain goes. Or if you're sleeping, you just show that way, like with your palm, you rest your head on your palm on one side, and the other side you let your hands down. Hmm. You know, that's your sleeping. So it's actually exactly the way you do it. We just put it nicely in a graceful way. That's what it is mainly.
Mm-hmm.
And what else can I describe? Like birds, you know, like this is supposed to be a parrot, you know, and it's like,
that one's real hard to describe on tape.
Right, or a snake, put both your hands together with the palm facing away from you, both your hands together.
From the thumbs there?
Yes, thumb together. And, you know, sometimes they have, like, we always, when we describe a snake, it's always a cobra. So you just paint the face of the cobra in here. So when you go, you know, this is how it moves.
And
how would you describe a snake if you couldn't talk? I mean, you want to tell somebody, so you just say that. So, and you show how it moves, and that's exactly how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some, it's very hard to put it on tape.
Well, it's good because at least you have an idea of some of the things that you're symbolizing there.
Yeah.
So even though it doesn't quite show up. It interests me because there's a certain kind of things that show up often in the symbolism, like the snake shows up in the mythology and some of the popular culture also of India there.
Snakes, I think, are really part of the culture in India. It's everybody here think that snake charm was in India. I tell you this, hardly anybody there. But it's there because all, if you see, like I was telling you about different kinds of... we have not just, like, Christians have Jesus and maybe Muslims have Allah or somebody. The same Allah, not our somebody, Allah. And in the same way, we have different, we just don't have one God. We have different gods for different purposes. Like Catholics would understand that because they have saints, you know, saint for this and saint for that. The same way, we have different gods for different things. We have a goddess for learning. We have a goddess for music. So we pray to her when we want to get better in music. And all these things really help in dancing. And we were talking about snakes. Now Lord Shiva, he has a snake around his neck. He's supposed to have taken poison from a snake. Lord Vishnu sleeps on a snake. Lord Krishna at one time killed a snake. And a snake, it's... So in everything, a snake is involved. And again, we do not kill cobra when it comes. You know, generally we try not to kill because it is associated with God. That's the only reason we find the cow sacred and the snake sacred also. Mm. And the river is sacred because somewhere it is associated with God. So those things are like untouchables. We don't... Just keep it pure.
So even though the snake would be somebody who's defeated by the gods, you'd still
yes, but some, maybe one snake was defeated by God, but the others are associated. They help.
Oh, I see.
Yes, they help. So Lord Shiva has a snake on his head. It helps, takes care of him. The same way the snake that Lord Vishnu is sleeping on, it's there to protect him.
Hmm.
So the cobra, other snakes we don't consider sacred. The cobra.
The cobras. I see. Yeah. Huh. The dance that you did on Saturday night there with the boy who was a snake charmer.
Right.
Could you describe that for me, kind of what was going on?
Okay. Here this boy comes with a little basket where he has a snake inside. And this girl plays the snake. when he starts playing his, he has a little, I don't know what you would call that. It's a very country instrument. It's
kind of like a fife or flute.
Yeah, like a flute. And he plays that. And we always, even though snakes supposedly cannot hear, he always dances around. So snakes can hear all these rhythms on earth, so they can feel the vibrations. So as he moves around, the snake moves along with that. But we don't assume that the snake cannot hear. He plays, and she dances accordingly. And then she tries to strike him, and he moves away. She tries to strike him, he moves away. But then he knows how to put her back to her place, and he starts quietly, you know. And the music slows down, and then she slows down. And then he winds up, puts her in the box, and leaves. That's what it is.
Is that one based on like the old snake charmers or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, uh-huh. We have that song. It's part of the traditional songs. Yeah. Some songs, this song also tells about how the snake is in Lord Shiva's head and how Vishnu, you know, lies on it and everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other one, another one of the dances you were doing was where she was like swimming under the water.
Oh, right. That is about a festival that takes place every 14 years, and it's like any other festival, any other part of the country where people come and they sell goodies. And at that festival, everybody takes a bath in this huge river. So she depicts how she goes there, takes a bath in that river, and. There are temples nearby, and they bring out the gods and goddesses from the temple. They bring them to the river banks where people come and pray to them, and they light like camphor, I was telling you, and lamps and everything they bring over there. They give people food. So that's what that dance was depicting, about the festival that takes part every 14 years. And that song was from Kerala. It was Malayalam. The language was Malayalam.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. What's the name of that particular festival?
Mamanga.
Mamanga, uh-huh. And what does that celebrate or commemorate?
There's no meaning as to why it is celebrated. It just is celebrated every 14 years.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. What else do I have here? Oh, you're mentioning also with the camphor on the hand there, and one of the motions, the hand motions, is to imitate that.
Right. See, when she does that, you know, like put her palm down, put her hand down with the palm facing the ceiling, and then make a half a circle or make a full circle. That's how we go. Maybe both of them together. You know, that's how we have a plate. The camphor is there, and we, you know, do that to God.
Hmm.
It symbolizes that whatever, like people may say, oh God, he's looking so beautiful or wearing such beautiful jewelry. We don't want, I don't know if you have what we call casting eyes on somebody. Mm. Okay, you don't know that expression, casting eyes? I don't know how you would describe casting eyes. They take away bad vibes.
Oh.
Okay, it's like somebody says, oh, you have this and you have that and you have this. Suppose you wear a beautiful dress that day and everybody says it's good, it's good, it's good. Maybe somebody is jealous, but they still say it's good. And maybe your dress tears that day. Okay, we would say like, oh, somebody has cast eyes on my dress. That's why this has happened. The same way it does for a normal person, it may sound, how can people cast eyes on God? But it's like when you worship somebody, anything is possible. So you want to take away all those bad things that people may, you know, people might not have gotten what they wanted from him, so they may say some things. So you take away all those things, you purify him, just like the camphor is purified. When you burn it, it's all gone. So we do those things.
We have something real similar to the casting eyes. It's like knocking on wood.
Right.
Expression.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like it was about the same
right.
thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. If I were to go to India, where would I see these kind of dances being performed?
The snake charmer dance you might even see. We have like different dances at different festivals. This Bharatanatyam you will not see in roadsides or any of those. You have to go to a performance hall where they have these things. And this is mainly in the south you would see it. If you go to Kerala, you will see Kathakali. Sometimes during some parts of the year when we have festivals, and we have a lot of festivals, they have like in like you have downtown here, they may have busy districts over there. And those things, they put a big kind of a stage, a mock stage. And you can see performances over there. You can see musicians and you can see, you know, snake charmers at those things. And you can, people will perform different kinds of dances. That's where you will really see folk dancing. We also have something where a person would put a, like two persons together, and they would, one would put a cow's head on their head, and they put a big sheet on top between them, so they have something like a pole, and put a sheet here, and there's two other persons walking behind them. So it looks like a cow's walking. We have that kind of dance also, which is real folk dancing, I guess.
Okay. I need to flip over my tape here.
So,
okay, we're
they cannot see. They cannot see. You know, they make two holes where they can like, a little bit see, but they have to learn coordination because when one walks, the other should know that's where they're walking. They don't practice for these things too much, and they have another kind of dance, which I wanted to tell you, which we wanted to see if we could do it on stage that day. There is a god called Lord Murugan. When people go up there, they carry pots of oil, milk, water. They have a big pot on their head, and they dance all the way up the hill. He lives on a, the temple is on a hill. They dance all the way up, and it's a dance by itself. And without spilling, though, they're not worried about this big pot of water. It's not just a little one, it's a big pot of water. They're not worried about that.
And that's kind of just done as part of their everyday life, as part of their choice.
But no, they have the festival.
Oh, I see.
They do that.
Huh.
And it's like they will dance. And the, this will, they, it will come down their shoulders, and they'll put it back there. But everything is done without spilling the water. Or they have a brass plate, just a regular brass tray with a rim. And they will dance with their feet on the rim of this plate or tray. And they will move the tray, and they will dance around, make a circle, whatever. And they can dance, you know, their hands, everything. Only their feet, it'll jump from, you know, position to position with the brass tray. And all, like I said, all this is oriented towards religion. They do it on certain functions. But now it has become part, like, if you learn dance, they teach you that part also. So that the culture doesn't die out, because not that many people are dedicated to do that much nowadays.
To really maintain the
yes.
traditions there.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And they have another one that's like a stick, and they have, I don't know how you would describe this on tape, put something on top like that.
Kind of like a rainbow across?
A rainbow, okay, you could say that. A
rainbow
across the stick, yes.
An arch, I guess, would be better.
Yes, an arch is better. And they would move their stick from the top of the head to the bottom and then back, and it keeps moving. It's like a hula hoop. You don't know how they move it, but they move it with their bodies dancing, their mouths chanting, the prayers. It's like they're all in some kind of trance. They could do everything. And that is, that you should, if I were you and I want to, these things you can see even in this country once in a while.
Oh, that'd be
but
great to
those
see.
Things you cannot see unless you go to India. So
yeah.
Those are the things you should find out, like when you can go and see them. That
yeah.
would be really interesting.
Yeah. I suppose to really understand the dance traditions, you'd have to go to the country itself and
yes,
spend some time there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that interests me is that it gets so intertwined with the other parts of the culture, like we were talking about before, where
mm-hmm.
you really need to get a background in the Indian or Hinduist
yes.
religion to understand the dance, and the dance will, I would suppose, help you understand the religion
yes.
also, where
yes.
they get so intertwined.
Everything is intertwined, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned also that a lot of these are done as part of the religious celebrations. Would that be done like as part of a special service, or would that be just during a festival associated
yeah,
with it?
It is. It used to be done part of religious functions, not at in the houses, like when they have big functions in temples. I don't know how to describe that here. Okay, like for example, in October we have a 10-day festival coming up. 10 days. In different parts of the world, I mean, in different parts of India, it is celebrated differently. It has different meaning, but it's the same 10 days. So we all celebrate it. at which time every day the deity from that temple will come out, which is not a common occurrence, but in those 10 days every day will come out. They will have music concerts at that time in all temples. And the temples are not small. You may see the ones that are come up lately are small. Otherwise, they are so huge. They are like palaces. They are so big. And they have a big concert hall. It does not have seats. They just put sheets, big sheets, carpets. You have to sit on the floor and watch these things. Because these temples were built, I think, centuries and centuries ago. So, at that time, yes, they will have dancing, and you know, you'll have street dancers and everything.
Yes. I see. I was wondering what else would go on at these celebrations in addition to the dancing. What else would I expect to see?
You will see lots of religious ceremonies going on, which you would not know what it is about if you don't. I mean, I myself will not know how. I mean, I would probably know 10% of what's going on over there. But it's like here, they will sell thousands of things. Every vendor from every place will bring his, product over there, handwork, bangles. We have lots of glass bangles, which is part of Indian culture, flowers, and, you know, different clothes from different places. And see, in India, it's so crowded. And at this time, everybody comes, no matter where they are. Some functions they would like to attend. They don't care how crowded it is. Everybody shows up at these functions. It's hard to describe for me, because I have seen it so many times, but I have not paid attention to it to tell you exactly what all is there.
Right.
But it's every day it happens there.
This 10-day festival coming up in October, what's the particular name of that?
It's called Dasara, which means 10 days of festival.
Okay.
In Jacksonville, we have another association called the Gujarati Samaj, and they celebrate elaborately. I think, since it's weekdays, they don't do too much on weekdays, but Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they have dancing that starts about maybe 8-9 o'clock, and it goes on till 2-3 o'clock. And this is like very typical traditional Gujarati dance that they do, with sticks, hitting sticks together and clapping hands together. It's something very interesting.
Was that the one that they also performed at the Asian Pacific Festival there, back in
something like that? Yes.
Yeah, where there were six women dancing around with sticks.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was real fascinating to see. It just flowed. It was beautiful.
See, we don't do as much dancing as they do. They do dancing, we don't do dancing. What we do is we have like 9 steps or 7 steps. It's traditional to keep odd numbers. And we fill them with toys and dolls and everything. And then we call people to our houses, we go to their houses. Then we have to sing over there. That's when you learn singing. Like, you have to sing when you go to their houses. And they give you eats and you give them eats. It's almost like Christmas time over here when you visit family and friends.
I see.
That's how it is on those 10 days.
What does that particular festival commemorate? Is that...
Well, we describe it as when Rama went to the forest and he killed Ravana, who was supposed to have been a Rakshas or a demon. And he was coming back to Ayodhya where he lived, where he was a king. So everybody is celebrating. So we celebrate those 10 days.
I see.
But in different parts, they will give you different meanings.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yes.
And that would vary also with a different particular type of Hinduism, too?
No, it's to say, it will be a Hindu story, but like I don't know, there are a couple of other stories that I know related to that. Like Lord Krishna, he killed a demon, so some people say it's that we are celebrating. But it is celebrated nevertheless, and the end of it, it's like last 2 days, one we pray towards the goddess of learning. We keep all our books, all our instruments and everything over there and pray. And that one day we do not touch the books or the instruments. And the next day we are supposed to study. So it's like the beginning of the year for us. But a New Year in India is different for different people at different times. We have New Year's in April. And a friend of mine, she has New Year immediately in November. Everything we all look at the moon calendar, sun calendar, but it's looked upon differently. That's why we are so varied in everything that we do. Even though we are Indians, we cannot, like, my neighbor is an Indian. I can't speak her language. She can't speak mine. Our food is different. The way we pray is different. even though we are from one country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what makes it real fascinating, because you've got so many different ethnic groups, so that lots of variety.
In fact, I learned some of the things about them after coming here, because I've been real deep south that I have not had the opportunity to mix with the people from north that much. Mm-hmm.
And these dances would be, the particular dances that you were doing would be just part of the Hinduist traditions, right? The Muslims wouldn't do anything at all on that.
The one that she was, Jyoti Nagpal was doing, that would be part of the Muslim tradition.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Was that done on Saturday night?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Which dance was that one again?
That was the one I told you she was wearing a typical, she's from the north and her picture was, okay, this is the one she was
on. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
But see, it's like, even though Muslims do the similar kind, Indians also do similar kind of dance. I mean, we are Indians. Hindus also do similar kind of same thing. But they all have the same basis. Even though it was like Muslims do different, they all have the same basis, because they were all, ages and ages ago, they were all Hindus. And the only way they could have learned something else is when somebody came and taught them here. So their dances would not be too different, but it is different from each part. Like if you go to India, if you see it down from the south, it is so different from the dance from the north, you would think it's a different country.
I see.
The way they are dancing.
Uh-huh.
So the Muslims wear that kind of costume when they dance.
Okay.
At the same time, the Hindus also wear that kind of costumes and dance. So up north, there are more Muslims over there. And they are like Persian heritage when Iran. People from Iraq, Persia at that time.
At that time, I think it was Persia.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm also interested in kind of how things have been maintained here in Florida. I suppose you're the main person to keep the dance going, right?
No, that's just in Jacksonville.
Okay, I mean just in Jacksonville.
Yeah, there are, but in Jacksonville, there are one or two of us who have just taught them for occasions like this, because we don't have the time to teach them on a regular basis. And there are one or two other persons who knows different kind of dancing, but they are working, and so they just don't have the time to teach.
Mm-hmm. How about throughout Florida? Is there
In Miami, they have a big Indian population. There's somebody who teaches classical dancing, somebody who really knows a lot about dancing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you found the children to be interested in learning this style of dance?
Yes. In the beginning, it was so hard that they did not like it. They were frustrated because it was hard for them to get dancing. They prefer steps. If I teach them like steps where they can do 1, 2, 3, they learn it. But when I start putting the hands and the eyes and the facial expression together, that's when they don't like it. But they have seen that as they have been doing for the last 3 years, they've been doing for every function, that they have improved. So every time they look at me, they're like, when are you going to teach me the next one? When are you going to teach me the next one? Yes, they are interested.
Oh, great.
See, this gives them an opportunity to go up on stage, which children love very much. In school, they have bigger competition, I think. But here, they don't have that much of a competition.
Awesome.
It's like if they do well, they just go and do it on stage. So, yes, they like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. And the main things that you're preparing them for is functions of the Indian Cultural Society?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
And we did one or two for when the JCPenney's had an India expedition. We did dances for them in both JCPenney's in Orange Park and Regency. And then we did at UNF a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's like, getting better.
Oh, you had just some of the children doing the dances there, right?
At all places, we just had the children doing the dances.
Yeah, I think I remember the
UNF
one at UNF.
We had 1, 2, 3 performances.
Okay, and they were dancing like one at a time?
Yes.
With the bells around their ankles?
Yes.
Okay, I remember seeing that one.
Yeah. Okay. One girl thing I did by herself, one. The other one, three of them did together.
Mm-hmm.
Two performances, yeah.
Okay. And look through my questions here a little bit more. Oh, do you ever use live music at all to your dances? Or you join?
Yes.
Oh, uh-huh.
Prema, she sings very well. So we did use the first... When I danced, we did... she danced, she sang, and I did the dancing. So at that time, we used... For children, it's like if we miss a beat, they would not know how to cope up with it.
Hmm.
So actually, the music... Prema sings, and we tape it, and then we do the... dancing. For some things, because we cannot get the instruments here, we just use a taped song. But otherwise, we try to use live as much as possible. But children find it very hard, because one time we may sing fast and one time we may sing a bit slow. Or, you know, maybe if they miss one beat, then the person who sings feel you have to make up for it. So we don't want any of those problems. So we sing and we tape it. Yes, sometimes we do, but we don't. We have one or two persons who play tabla over here, which is another Indian instrument. It's like the drums. Mm-hmm. And somebody who plays the Indian kind of harmonium. Harmonium, I don't think it's Indian. It's Western. I don't know if you have it here. It's something like a piano. It's just a small box version.
Okay, I think I've seen those before.
Yeah.
There's an instrument called a harmonium that's made by little glass jars type things, and you wet your finger and slide around that way, and you get that kind of thing. But that's hardly anybody plays that anymore. That kind of disappeared hundreds of years ago.
We have something like that even in India, where you have water in different vessels, and then, you know, you hit them, and as you hit the music, that plays different.
Yeah.
The sounds.
Yeah, there's another type of harmonium, I think, that's kind of like a pump organ or something like that, that you're getting kind of reading sound through it. But
no, this is very much like the harmonium I'm talking about is very much like a piano.
Yeah.
It's just a small box version, like a Casio, I guess.
What other types of instruments are used in accompanying the dance there?
Mainly for dance, you need, other than music, you need the drums, tabla, and then you need the person who teaches you, generally the person who teaches you dancing. She's not the one who sings. She's the one who plays, who has this, it's like it's a cymbal. It's a very small cymbal. It just fits in the palm of your hands, that small. That's what they hit, you know, one cymbal against the other, to make sure you get your steps right. We follow the steps. The music is the background. That's mainly for the people. In our minds, we follow the steps. The music also is for your facial expressions and everything. So other than these three, we don't really use that much.
I see.
You have to have the tabla, which just tells you the beat, and the cymbal, which the teacher who teaches you, you know, hits to just to make sure you get your beats right. So you just follow that.
Is that particular type of music set aside just as dance music, or would that also be performed for, like, concerts or anything?
It will be performed now at concerts, and, you know, just playing music. But then you will have a violin that goes with it, and you will have a different kind of drums that go with it. So the same song, but it has to be performed in a different way for the person who dances, or if the person just sings. Because you have to have your beats for this one. They will stop at one paragraph, they will sing, they will stop, and then they'll have this whole the tatai I was talking about, they have the whole steps, and then you go back to the song. So they incorporate this into the song.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And let's see. That's about it, as far as what I can think about to ask you about the dance traditions. I've got a few more questions. I'm kind of interested in the culture in general and kind of putting together where the dance fits in with maintaining other Indian traditions. There's a lot more I could ask you about the dance if I knew a little bit more of myself.
If I knew more, I would tell you. Dance has become very popular, though. Bharatanatyam has become very popular now. At one time, there were only few people who were learning. But now, if you go to India, everybody is learning music and everybody is learning Bharatanatyam too. All the youngsters, they see somebody else doing it, they want to do it. So it's become very popular all over again. It's like it goes through cycles. Suddenly it becomes popular, and then people are not interested anymore. Again, people are, it's like yoga. See, here also, like, some of the positions, if you practice yoga, they say you can become a good Bharatanatyam dancer, because you need stamina for this too. Because, you know, it's each performance usually is about 2 or 3 hours.
I don't know that.
Like after a dance, maybe, you know, you go change your dress and again you come back. So it's, and this is always on your feet, so it's about 2 or 3 hours.
So the Indians are getting interested in the older cultural traditions that may have been dropped. Okay. What do you think accounts for that interest in those kind of things in general?
I don't know. Since I have not lived there, I don't know how why it has come up, but I think generally, if you see one person in your family learning it, you also, and you like it, and she goes up on stage and she does everything, and then another person wants to learn it.
How about here in America? Do you think the Indians are interested in preserving these kind of traditions, or?
I think they are, but it's very hard because in big cities like Chicago, New York, they have very good performances. And performers who live here in this country, they have migrated to this country and they live here, so they teach them. But in Jacksonville, so far, nobody of that caliber has come. Mm-hmm. But children are interested because the parent is interested. I don't know how it would be after that. The first generation of children, people who have just come from India and their children, they're interested because the parents are interested. I don't know if the culture will survive after that because this is something you have to teach and you have to practice.
Yeah.
It's not like any other dance where, every dance you have to practice. But here, there you can watch TV or something and learn. But in India, you can even learn by watching TV a little bit. But here you can't. You have to go for special classes for this.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to wait and see if the second generation would be, third generation would be interested.
It amazes me how fast those things can be lost. Like my grandparents came from Denmark, and it was real common to hear Danish being spoken in my grandparents' hometowns back during the 20s and 30s. And now to go back there, you can run into like the older people who still speak the language, but that's it.
It's even children here, like my sister's son, he hardly... He was talking in Tamil right up to the day he went to school. 2 months after that, he says, I don't need to talk in Tamil. I need to talk in English because everybody knows English. I don't want to talk in this language. Mm. It's your language. It's not mine. So they feel learning one more thing at that stage is hard.
It's
like I was exposed to English and Tamil at the same time because my mother always spoke to me in Tamil. My daddy always spoke to me in English. And the school I went to was English medium school. So we learned both things at the same time. It was not like as if I had to go and learn another language. Mm-hmm. It was there. You just picked it up. If you didn't know it, then you couldn't talk with some of the children.
Mm.
But here you don't have to learn the second language.
Yeah. I think maybe as the children get older, that's something that they would appreciate, though. Just
I think so. I think now they don't want to, but once they are 15, 16, then they wish they had. Some of them tell me, I wish I had learned it.
Yeah.
But then, they can, because as long as the parents are there, they can learn it.
Yeah. Outside of, like, the language and the dance traditions, what other things do you see Indians kind of maintaining to keep some of the cultural ties there in America?
Well, religion is something that's also been difficult for them to maintain, the children here. They see Christmas, and they want to celebrate Christmas, and here, so everybody has a Christmas tree, but they're not Christians, and they don't advise them on being Christians either. So the children find it hard. They don't know where they belong. And we don't have, in Jacksonville, we don't have a temple. But Hinduism is something you can practice at home. Like many of the Indians have a room or some place where we have the pictures of our deity. We go pray every morning before we leave for work or school. Just get the day started. So religion is not so hard to maintain, but you have to make an effort to teach the children. And the children, being children, they find the names so hard. They don't remember these names.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not the names that they hear every day either. So that is hard for them.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that they would like to maintain. They are trying to.
Mm-hmm. I would suppose it would be difficult to maintain the Hinduism in a society that's predominantly Christian.
Yes. Yeah.
Just a lack of understanding and appreciation.
If there is a temple, like in Pittsburgh, there's a temple where they meet. Every Sunday they go there, they have dance lessons over there, they have music lessons, and they have many things over there. So children go there and they see other children being interested. Here, that place where we could all meet is not there.
Mm.
But every Sunday they have, a Gita class where Bhagavad Gita they learn, and nowadays children are going there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that every Sunday to whomever is interested in going. And then we have these Indian performances where you can, learn something. We try to tell them on Independence Day or maybe on 26th of January, which is a Republic Day, we tell them, ask them questions about India so they know something about India.
Mm-hmm.
The food, they're all right till they go to school again. Once they go to school, they don't want to eat Indian food. They find, it's too spicy or they want...
Really?
Yes. They want pizza or they want macaroni and cheese. That's how it is, I'm sure.
Huh.
And
do they maintain the vegetarianism in school?
Some of them do. So it depends on the parents, really. Mm-hmm. Many of them are not vegetarians, so they do not force their children to be that either.
Awesome.
Like in my family, I'm a vegetarian, and I don't have any children, but my sister has a son who is a vegetarian. He goes to school, and people tell him, how come you don't eat these cookies? He says, there's egg in it, so I don't eat cookies with eggs. So it's a little hard on the child. Mm-hmm. It's easy for the parent to say, don't eat, but it's hard on the child. Mm-hmm. But if the child can do it, then it's good for him. And if he, when he grows up, if he doesn't want to be a vegetarian, that's his choice. But we were brought up that way, so some of them are trying to. Many of them make sure they don't eat beef. That's what is more important, because Hinduism does not say don't eat meat. It just says don't eat beef.
Oh, okay.
We are not against, generally Hinduism is not against, doesn't advocate being vegetarian. It doesn't say anything about it.
Oh.
Brahmins are vegetarians.
Oh, okay. Okay. How about some of the other things that you see being maintained? So we've got the music, the dance.
Let me see.
Language a little bit.
Right, the clothes. When we get together for Indian functions, we try to wear Indian clothes. You know, that's something we, I think Indians more than other people do not want to lose. It's that, you know, we wear saris. And when, even for an American function or something where we have to go out, and we, instead of an evening dress, we wear a sari, because we find that, I think if you ask most Indian women, they always feel they look much better in a sari than anything else. It's a dress they grew up with. Mm-hmm. And it just suddenly you cannot lose it. And you don't, you can't seem to lose the affection you have for that costume, because it's so easy to wear. It's just 6 yards of material you tie up in a way that looks nice on you. So there, when they go to India or when somebody goes, they get some clothes for the children, so they also know what the Indian clothes are. Mm-hmm. Other than the festivals, festivals are something that's difficult for people to maintain. They forget because they don't have the Indian calendar, so one has to remind the other this is when it is, and that some people forget. Mm-hmm. But Diwali is one thing that everybody celebrates. Mm-hmm. Because the festivals are different for different Indians. See, I may have something that they don't celebrate. So we call up one another, and that's the only way we keep in touch. I think it's more for the first generation of adults than it really is with children. Children don't really feel the need to be with other Indian children. Mm-hmm. Indian people of the first generation who have just come here in the lab, you know, for the first time, they feel the need to keep in touch with other Indians.
Mm-hmm. It helps make the transition into maybe a little smoother there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we feel otherwise we would be completely cut off. And we've been in India maybe 20 years, 15 years, 30 years, so mm-hmm. we have the need in ourselves to be with other Indians. Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, it seems like the Indians have adjusted pretty smoothly to life in America.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, once you come here, I don't know if it's just Indians, anybody who has gone to another country, you have to adjust. You have no choice. Mm-hmm. You've come here, so you have to adjust.
Or else you go back.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We are also talking, some of the handwork's been maintained a little bit, like the kolams there.
Okay. We do that kolam, that is like painting on the floor at functions. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, everything is carpeted, so we cannot do it on there. But on the floor, once in a while, maybe we can wash it off. Mm-hmm. And then we have what is called mehndi. It's a hand painting. It's done on your hand. And generally, it's done for weddings. And there's a person here who does do it, professionally for weddings. And she was a professional hand painter even in India. She did that. And we have a, you know, some people play instruments in St. Augustine, not in Jacksonville that I know of. And we have one of our Indian restaurants. Mm-hmm. So they have the tandoor, which is typically traditional. They have a big clay pot, and they have their bread, and they put it inside it. It's not cooked on the fire. It's cooked by the heat.
Oh, I see.
And then you take it out. It does not see fire. It's cooked inside. So that's traditional. They got it from there. Mm-hmm. And Diwali is also called Festival of Lights, and that's what it means. So if you go to people's houses, you can see, like, I have that lamp over there. We fill it with oil. And we put some thread and light it up. So if it's in many people's homes, you can see they would have light up and the whole house would be lit with. Mm-hmm. I mean, now, because we are here, candles and things. Mm-hmm. So traditions are maintained. They may not be up to the extent as we did in India, but to an extent because, you know, we like the children to know what it is that we do back home.
Uh-huh. Have you found Americans interested in Indian traditions very much?
Yes, especially they are interested, like they are very curious about the red dot that we have, and they are very curious about the sari. I find that many Americans want to try Indian food, but once they taste it, they find it as hot, and I don't think for them they really like it that much. Mm-hmm. That's how my personal feeling is. And so I make it as bland as possible when I have them home, or try to, you know, incorporate a little bit American things here and there, so it's palatable for them. Mm-hmm. On the whole, yes, they're very interested.
What do you think makes them so interested?
I think because we are so different. Yeah. Indian culture is so different. And even if you tell them one time, they don't understand. And this is something that we grew up with, so we can't understand. Why is it that they don't understand? But it's so complicated that I guess you have to read a lot before, mm-hmm, you know, because they don't know anything. If somebody knows something, then it's easier. If they don't know anything about Indian religion, Hinduism, then whole of India is difficult to understand. You have to know something about the religion. Everything is based on the religion. The carvings in the temples, the dances, the music, which is... The songs that people sing, classical songs, is also about God. They describe him or his dances.